Hello and thanks for joining us. You're listening to episode 5 of the Citation podcast with me, Jill McAteer, Head of Employment Law at Citation. For those of you who follow Citation on social media, you'll have noticed this week that we hit 1,000 listeners for the podcast. From the whole Citation team and I, we'd like to thank every one of you for listening. It's a huge milestone for us. On Monday, 12th July, Boris Johnson confirmed that England would move into the fourth and final phase of the roadmap out of lockdown from the 19th of July, ending almost all COVID restrictions, including social distancing, limits on social contact, mandatory face coverings, and removing the work from home guidance. Whilst the lifting of restrictions was billed as Freedom Day, cases are still very much on the rise. And despite all the talk of personal judgment and common sense, employers will remain responsible for the health and safety of their workforce. So in this episode, I'll be joined by my colleague and Citation's health and safety expert, Michael Brown, and we'll be answering some of your key questions on the lifting of lockdown restrictions and what this means in practice for you as an employer. Welcome back to the podcast, Michael.
Thanks, Jill. It's really good to join you again.
Now, employers and indeed employees might be confused about the significance of the 19th of July, given that in the space of just over a week, we seem to have gone from Freedom Day, removal of all restrictions, then it shifted to more of personal judgment and exercise of personal responsibility. And now we're hearing it's about recommendation and expectation on standards of behaviour. What do you think the practical difference will be for employers on the lifting of lockdown restrictions, on the way in which they manage COVID risks within their business?
The main difference that, to me, seems to have occurred is that the legal duties on employers from the Coronavirus Act have been lifted, but you've still got a legal duty to your workers and others that might be affected by your business practices under the Health and Safety at Work Act. So, you know, you need to take reasonably practical steps to reduce any sort of harm that might come to others. And that includes COVID-19. And in fact, you know, the government have been quite specific that as part of the controls, you need to do still a COVID risk assessment, or you need to do a risk assessment that includes COVID as a risk and then fulfill, you know, carry out your controls. So really, from a day-to-day basis, actually, the only sort of difference that I can detect is that the overall sort of guidance for this, you know, there's no longer a legally sort of enforceable act under the Coronavirus Act. There is, though, still under the Health and Safety at Work Act. So you still need to take steps as an employer to mitigate the harms in your workplace. So really, in one way, nothing's changed. In another way, yes, there is more change, because actually the responsibility is more down to your judgment and whether you as an employer get that right or not.
So, Michael, if you're an employer that's been operating all the way through the pandemic, you have got your COVID secure risk assessment and you have got COVID secure measures in place that you've been working to for many months, come the lifting of restrictions, is this really an opportunity for you to then be just ripping that up and starting afresh? Or what should the approach be if you already have measures in place?
Oh, I think ripping them up and starting in is a really bad start. If it isn't broken, don't fix it comes to mind. So just because you can roll back on something doesn't necessarily mean that you should. So the main bit of advice I'd give here would be to, if you've already got a COVID secure risk assessment, which again was mandatory under the previous framework, why don't you just review it? Keep it. Don't give yourself any extra unnecessary work, review your current controls and work out whether they're still applicable and still proportionate. There may be certain areas where you might want to think about, we don't have to do social distancing there. If you do decide to roll back on things, you still need to be, satisfied that with whatever controls you've removed, that you can still avoid having an outbreak and work. So that might mean that you double down, you make sure that everyone takes a lateral flow test every single day before they turn up. So again, you're preventing it from getting to the workplace. It might be that you keep barriers and screens that you've bought. It may be that you continue to allow a proportion of the workforce to work from home. You know, the government has said, I think that they expect, and this is quite crucial actually, I think they were saying they expect that businesses will make a gradual return back to the workplace from home working. So, you know, I think their expectation there is, you know, not everyone rushing through the door on day one, you know, and causing a huge spike in infections. I think they want people to come in gradually. So, you know, review your risk assessment. And if you've got one previously, you know, definitely make use of it. Save yourself the effort of doing it again. And, you know, if you don't have one in place yet, again, if you're a Citation customer, there's plenty of templates that you can adapt. So, you know, just really try and make sure that you've got something written down. You then need to communicate your findings to your staff. So, again, you need to consult with them, take their feedback on board. But, you know, through all of this, if you as an employer do decide that actually your workplace requires social distancing to continue or mask wearing to continue because it's part of your COVID you know, control measures, then you can keep that going. Just because the government have said to you, it's the same way that you might want to you know, instruct all employees to wash their hands when they first turn up. If you write that into your risk assessment and you explain that it's part of the controls and you get that signed off and you brief your staff and you refresh them, you know, there's no reason why you can't just, for simplicity, you know, continue with your current controls for a little bit longer. I mean, Jill, from a sort of, you know, employment law and human resources perspective, how are you finding, are you getting clients sort of ring up and ask, you know, sort of awkward questions? Are people fully sort of understanding, you know, what's required now? Is it easier or more difficult to navigate the HR issues around the easing of lockdown? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's hard not to draw parallels with the experience of last summer when people were given the green light to go back into the office. And at that time, the whole emphasis was on making sure that people felt confident in the arrangements that which were being put in place. And of course, the government had given some very quite prescriptive guidelines on what a safe working environment looked like. You know, obviously that was quite difficult for some employers to put in place, but at least they had very detailed guidance on what to do. And then they had to do their risk assessment, share it with the employees, make sure everyone knew what they were coming back to. And of course, if anyone didn't like those arrangements, the employers had the certainty of saying, well, we're following government guidance. So although, and of course, at that time, we had like lower infection rates as well. So there was a lot in place there that could give both employers confidence that they were doing the right thing and employees confidence of what they were coming back to and the fact that the mechanisms that their employer had put in place were actually the right ones. And it's difficult to not contrast that with the situation we have at the moment, where this shift away from legal obligation and detailed guidance to more of employers analysing the situation and deciding what is best is really, really quite a difficult one, because I always find that where employers are given much more flexibility, it actually can make it more difficult for them to be sure that they're doing the right thing. And equally, it can give much more room for employees to argue, I think you're being too strict in what you're doing, or I don't think you're being strict enough. This exercise of discretion and judgment without really prescriptive guidance to fall back on, I think, is going to cause many, many more problems for employers. And that's certainly what we're seeing at the moment. You know, we've got lots of clients phoning us up saying, well, actually, face coverings work for us and we feel that it's necessary going forward. But We're now getting employees saying, well, it's not a legal requirement anymore, so I'm not going to do it. So we then really have to look at the compliance, as exactly as you were saying, Michael. It's for the employer to decide what is necessary under the risk assessment. And if something is a necessary control, then employees have an obligation to comply with that. And of course, unless they have a particular reason why they can't deal with that, and you know, if that causes an issue for them, and that's got to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. But as I said, that this potential conflict between what employers say is necessary within the context of the government saying, oh, legal restrictions are going, is quite a difficult one to navigate. Although I do think it is helpful that increasingly the government's tack on this has now changed, and it's all about corporate responsibility as well as personal responsibility, and also, you know, a strong recommendation and expectation. So I do think employers can use that to help navigate those HR issues.
I'd agree with that, actually. It has been helpful with the change from, you know, from the sort of you must to, there did feel like there was a bit of a sort of dead space in between the must legislation and now the sort of where we're moving more towards the sort of make your own judgments. The fact that they are using the expectation and recommendation sort of language, to me, I would treat that almost like the approved code of practices that the Health and Safety Executive have. They're not, you know, legally binding law documents, but you need to make sure you're doing that as a minimum or something better. So, you know, obviously as a health and safety professional, I'd always err on the side of caution. And I mean, what are your thoughts on the sort of 2-week delay that we've had? Do you think it's helped matters in particular, or do you think that in actual fact it's sort of just delayed the inevitable?
I think the delay would have been really useful if it gave us more time to consult with employees about what the work arrangements would be when they came back. But unfortunately, that it's not been able to be used for that purpose because employers have not been given a real concrete guidance on what it should be. And of course, the COVID working safety guidelines were only updated at the very last moment. And although, as we expected, there hasn't been any significant change to the basic rules we've been operating under and how COVID risks are assessed, it has been difficult for employers to proceed with certainty when they haven't had that guidance. So it's inevitably felt all very last minute to employers and employees. And, you know, even the recommendation and expectation that the return to work will be gradual. Gradual is quite a nebulous concept, isn't it, really? Gradual for one employer might be, yes, you return for half your normal working hours week one and your full working hours week two. Whereas I suspect the government has much more in mind that this will be phased over the summer period. It's interesting, actually, quite a few employers that I've been speaking to were already banking on this change happening at the beginning of September anyway. I think there's a kind of back to school feeling about it that, you know, people would have plenty of time to get used to what was going to happen. And then September would be the real start of the change. But for others, they were hoping to get everyone back in on the 19th of July. And actually, on my reading of the guidance, that is actually would not be unlawful. It's just not what would be expected or recommended. And of course, if your employee is arguing, well, actually, your plans are too forced, it's too soon, and this isn't what the government's recommending in terms of a gradual return, it's going to be difficult to argue with that, given the lack of precise guidance.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because again, as part of your risk mitigation for COVID, which you're still required to do, you know, part of that, you're the top of the thing that you need to do really is try and avoid the risk. Now, for me as a health and safety professional, I'm getting people say to me, you know, like, I can bring them all back now because it doesn't say that they should work from home wherever possible. It just says, you know, yeah, gradual return. And as you've said, what do we mean by gradual? I mean, can employers now force their employees back into the office, or Is it still sort of fairly dependent on consultation and risk and the outcomes of the risk assessment? I mean, personally, I think most employers would look and sort of, you know, talk about gradual. I would prioritise potentially, although there's probably some issues here for you, Jill, as well to dig into, but I would potentially look at saying, right, well, you know, vaccinated members of staff are less likely to be able to become seriously ill or to even become ill from this. Perhaps I would encourage those members of staff back first, and then later on, you know, potentially look to encourage others back with their consultation. I mean, what are your thoughts? Can employers force people back?
It really is a minefield. I think your starting point has got to be, if your contract says that your place of work is the workplace, and the government has now removed that firm guidance that you should be working from home where you can, then if an employer wants to bring you back, legally they're entitled to do so. But then there's a number of issues around that. First of all, you still have to contend with the guidance that return should be gradual. Secondly, you have got to contend with the fact that if an employee's expectations of what a return to work looks like is very different from yours, they may then force the issue by bringing a flexible working application, and you only need 26 weeks service and not to have made an application in the previous 12 months to do that. And that will inevitably then lead to a process whereby the employer will have to assess whether that's a reasonable request. There are 8 broad statutory reasons why you can refuse that request, but they all go to the fact that this would be in some way detrimental to the business. And of course, if the employee has been working from home predominantly over the last 15 months, there is a question mark about how easy it is to show that. Not that there aren't good reasons for wanting people back, because I think, you know, evidence is emerging that, you know, a lot of people are finding challenges with developing younger members of the team, onboarding new employees, a lack of collaboration between teams, etc., from working at home. But those tend to be a little bit more intangible and not as easy to point to as evidence as it is, look, productivity figures are going down, or this customer need is not being met. Then, of course, there's the issue of employees saying, I don't feel that it's safe for me to return. And that's particularly significant at a time when COVID rates are increasing. And of course, although we rely very heavily on vaccination as a means of protection, at the same time, not everyone has been double vaccinated, not everyone is able to be vaccinated, and not everyone may respond with the same level of immunity from a vaccination. But I think regardless of those issues, businesses have a real need to bounce back as quickly and as strongly as possible. And it's everyone's resilience is quite depleted, you know, to some extent or the other at the minute. And it can be very sapping on everyone's energies if these are dealt with as potential conflict situations rather than trying to find a way forward with consent. And I think that's all about really understanding as an employer, you explaining your position to your employees, you understanding your employees' position, and then trying to find a way forward which, you know, works best for the business. And even if that means an element of compromise, and even if it means trying some things out, and I certainly think this is not the time to be making concrete decisions about permanent changes to arrangements contractual changes, because to my mind, there's too much up in the air to be able to know what to do best for your business. But that might be a better way forward rather than having to rely upon, you know, laying down really hard and fast rules about this and not listening to your employees. But you did touch there upon vaccination, Michael, and certainly so much reliance has been placed on this vaccine wall, and because really that is all that has changed from the time when we needed to all stay at home and we needed to have social distancing in place. It's really vaccination. So when you talk about carrying out your risk assessment, do you think in order to be able to do that risk assessment, you would really need to know the vaccination status of people working in a particular area in order to be able to, you know, comprehensively assess the COVID risk?
Oh, yes. And it's, you know, it's a very sort of touchy area, isn't it, really? To say the very, very least. It's difficult because obviously, you know, as you've indicated, and as I mentioned as well, vaccines are not always 100% effective at preventing transmission or illness. But we are in the position, as you've indicated, where the government is relying on the vaccine as a control. So for us, we are also now in a position where we are relying on the vaccine as a control to a certain extent, in the similar sort of way that if you were sending someone perhaps overseas or people in certain professions, you would, you know, they would need to have certain vaccinations to fulfil the job safely. Now, it's a bit of a difficult one because I would say you would need, there are clearly data protection considerations here, but you would need probably to have a good justifiable reason why. And again, you know, if you're removing your social distancing, then that's another layer of control that you're passing down to the vaccine. I almost think of the vaccine in a certain way like a little bit of personal protective equipment. You know, it's sort of, in a way, it's the last line of defense. The irony being, of course, that it is also one of the first, because we are now you know, in a position where we'll be walking around, milling around, and not everyone will be wanting to socially distance. So as an employer, I would say yes, you might need that knowledge, you might need to be able to investigate that, but I would do it in the context of trying to reduce risk. So I would say, you know, it might be, for example, that you've got a customer facing area and you need to make sure that, you know, if your customers aren't going to be socially distanced anymore or they aren't wanting to wear face coverings, you know, you might say, well, actually, you know, keep the screens up if it's a customer facing area. But we'll also prioritise so that we'll try and make sure that it's vaccinated staff that do those functions. I would also potentially look at the individual risk assessments again and consider the people who were shielding before. So although the shielding guidance has now gone, there is new guidance that's just been published about how to protect vulnerable workers. But again, that relies very, very heavily on get them vaccinated and, you know, and get, you know, and have those conversations with your employees. I mean, from your perspective, I've no doubt there's a minefield here as well with, you know, does an employer have the right to ask that, you know, to ask those questions? From my point of view, I think health and safety wise, it's an advantage to have that knowledge. And it's certainly something that I could probably justify as part of a risk assessment control. Although every ounce of me is screaming inside going, no, stick to your distancing, stick to the barrier, stick to everything other than that. But, you know, we are in the position now where we're being told, you know, this is a control. I mean, what do you think? You know, is it pertinent for an employer to ask an employee about that? And what sort of circumstances could they ask about it?
Well, we get asked this a lot, and it is such a sensitive issue. This is special category data, which is very heavily protected under data protection rules. Having said that, I do think that if you have got a good reason for asking the question, then that will be and what you're going to use that information for. That's really the nub of how you would approach, is it a reasonable thing to request your employees? So if you wanted to know their vaccination status, but you were just going to record this information and file it away and it's just nice to have, then that's probably a good indication you don't have a good reason to be asking in the first place. But the example you have given of using that and, you know, that helping to inform your risk risk assessment about a safe way of working is a really good justification for doing it. But you do have to have a whole host of controls around this. And for example, you do have to consult and communicate with your employees about the fact of why you're going to be asking this. You've got to tell them how you're going to be storing the information, what it's going to be used for. And as I say, you need to have a policy as well. And that policy will have to reflect data protection as well as employment law considerations. And that's something which we do have a draft policy which has been poured at internally through not just employment law experts, but also our own data protection team, just to make sure that it is satisfying the key requirements. But yes, it is an extremely controversial subject. And I do think that there probably are going to be quite a few employers who might be thinking, it's one thing if people cannot have the vaccination, but if they choose not to have the vaccination, is this something I've really got to go to extra trouble about in my COVID secure work arrangements? The fact that they choose not to have it, is surely that's down to them, and I don't have to factor the fact that they're unvaccinated into my planning. I mean, what would you say to employers who've got that line of thinking?
It's not an easy call to make, because again, you know, there's no direct government guideline saying, there's no government mandate saying you will all be vaccinated. You know, people have got a legal, you know, right to, in certain workplaces, to refuse it. I would say, it's what is reasonably practicable. So you will need to have some controls in place. So again, this is why the risk assessment is so important. It might well be that unless they've got a medical exemption, again, fine, you know, people will wear face coverings, they'll maintain distancing. You might allow that employee to continue, if possible, to work from home. But again, it's going to be the consultation sort of meeting halfway. The real, you know, change in this will come at the point where the government will probably make a decision one way or another that this will be managed like another respiratory illness within the workplace. I don't think, they're not quite saying it, but I don't think we're at that point just yet. I think it's the 16th of August, they're looking about reducing the requirement for close contacts who have been double vaccinated to self-isolate. That to me seems like another non-official sort of review point on this roadmap. And you mentioned September earlier, and I think we've discussed this in the past, where that might be a natural sort of point where they have enough data, they have enough vaccine in the population, that there is a certain level of herd immunity. I'm not privy to those sort of data, but I mean, as an employer generally, you'd have to go back on your other controls and go, right, you know, what else have I got in the workplace? And again, you know, there may still be an element of social distancing, mask wearing, face coverings, ventilation, hygiene, all of those controls still count. And if nothing else, as you're going into the flu season and things like that, you know, the likelihood is you'll have a healthier workforce for it. But yeah, there's not really, you can't, from my knowledge, you know, you can't force an employee. You can't say, well, you will comply with my requirement that all staff are vaccinated if it's in a risk assessment. We're not there yet, you know. And I know there were conversations about this happening in healthcare, but for most industries, you know, it's not mandatory, and I don't think the government is going to make it mandatory. So you'd need to rely again on your previous controls.
Yes, they have confirmed that they're going to introduce it in care home settings, and we're expecting to see that legislation around about October. And they've also promised consultation and introducing it into healthcare and the wider social care. But yes, I completely agree. There's no appetite, it seems, to make it compulsory elsewhere. But I've got to say, the government have reserved their right to change rules. They've said they're going to be following the data very, very closely and taking whatever action they think appropriate. Obviously, they hope they can avoid reversing back on any of these steps, but really everything is open. And I suppose that is the message for employers as well, is that you've got to keep an eye open to the updates, of course, that that we send out, for example, on government guidance, how your business is responding to the measures that you've put in place. Keep everything under review and check it regularly and make adaptations when needed.
I mean, that's a, as you're saying, pretty good point there. You need to keep everything under review. I mentioned, thinking about it, and this is probably a good question for you, Jill, about perhaps continuing with face coverings. What if there's a situation where actually you've got an employee who, you know, perhaps they don't necessarily need to wear a face covering according to the risk assessment, but they want to, and other colleagues sort of object to it? I'm sure that's probably going to be, yeah, a lot of people listening will probably think, why would anyone have a problem with that? But, you know, we, as we know, face coverings seem to be very controversial. So, I mean, you know, workplace and employee decides, actually, do you know, I just want to wear this still. But their other colleagues aren't so happy. How would you deal with that? Does it sort of come under, would it be bullying almost? Or I suppose peer pressure comes to mind, but how would you, as an employer, what's the best way to sort of manage that kind of conflict?
Well, certainly it could well be bullying, and it could even be discriminatory if the reason that they want to wear the face covering is connected to a protected characteristic they have. I do think that face masks and face coverings have almost become a symbol of the pandemic in some respects, and therefore it is so divisive because to some they're so desperate to put this all behind us and get back to normal, as I see it, that they almost find it offensive to see a face covering, especially in areas where they don't consider it to be necessary. And that's why I think part of the reason why feelings run so strongly on this, I think from an employer's perspective, they need to be very, very mindful of anxieties that people may have, especially with the removal of social distancing. And it doesn't really matter whether someone is double vaccinated, because of course they can still contract the virus. So they have to be mindful of what employees feel they may need to do to protect their own health and safety. So unless it's impeding their ability to do their job in some way, I would very much go along allowing people to do that. I mean, I saw that in the very early days of the pandemic, for example, where people were coming back for the first time and wanted to wear face coverings. And the advice we were giving was, if it's not impacting on their ability to do the job, let them do it, because it's really about confidence in returning to work. And very often, within a very short space of time, as soon as they get that confidence, they no longer feel it's necessary to wear the face covering. And then that's a good resolution for everyone. But I think employers have got to take a very, very strong stance that, you know, regardless of what people choose to do, as long as it's within the permitted limits of what their health and safety assessment says, and it's not impeding on their ability to do their job, no one should be picked upon or harassed by their choices. And certainly, you know, you've really got to take a strong stance that people are not allowed to bully or marginalise their colleagues for whatever reason. And I think, you know, once you get to a stage where people are saying, well, I don't want to work with such and such because they don't believe in vaccination and I'm sure they're not going to be vaccinated, things like that, you really are embarking upon a potentially world of pain. So you've got to start off very firmly that you are, that as an employer, you are setting the standards in your workplace. And, you know, if anyone is stepping out of line, that you will deal with it. But employees do not take that upon themselves. The only one exception I would say to that is that in terms of compliance with the rules, you know, it may be that employees in a friendly way might say, oh, actually, you know, as a reminder, you're supposed to do this or do that. But I think, again, you've got to be very, very careful, because that message may not land very well with some people. So it's a good idea when you are introducing people back and when you're telling them what it says in the risk assessment, that at the same time, you do explain to them what they should do if they find someone who is not complying with that. Do they report it to a manager? Do they have a friendly word with that particular person? How in your business you expect these issues to be raised, and therefore therefore you're not leaving employees to make up the right approach as they go along.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And again, as you've just said, a lot of this is interlinked. If you as an employer decide that you want mask wearing in certain situations and it's in your risk assessment and it's a reasonable instruction, you've consulted with your staff, they've signed it off, that then becomes a very different sort of conversation, along the lines of there is at least a policy that people can abide by. But yeah, it's I think we're going to have a lot of inquiries about this over the next few months, health and safety and HR related, to be honest with you.
No doubt about that at all. So we're coming to the end of today's episode. Thanks very much for joining us, Michael.
No worries, Jill. Thank you for having me on. Again, it's just really important. I can't stress enough that people need to keep this under review and, just keep talking to their employees. Everyone's a little bit uncertain at the moment, and as long as people can stay on top of what they need to do internally and keep everything under review, they should be on the right track.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the fifth episode of the Citation Podcast. If you're in need of the backing of Citation's experts on any of the topics we've discussed today, please get in touch with us at podcast@citation.co.uk. If you're a Citation client, please feel free to give our advice lines a call. Alternatively, you can access our useful resources and guides on our website at www.citation.co.uk. Thank you. Goodbye.